Welcome report for Friday, July 19th. It's been a busy day. I'll dig into the CrowdStrike thing. I'll dig into some of the let's just say narrative around the assassination stuff, and I'll dig into some of the other events of the day. But let's talk CrowdStrike first. So CrowdStrike was, here's the short answer. They pushed an update. The update included a driver file that blew up Windows 10 and brought service to its knees and caused a blue screen on Windows boxes. And if you've owned a Windows box, and box, I mean desktop, laptop, et cetera, then you will hear me say that if you've ever patched a Windows box, there's times where you patch and it literally blue screens as soon as you patch it. Like, one of the tricks of the trade, especially in the industry, is you never update a Windows Exchange server because you never know if the damn thing's going to blow up. And notoriously, Windows updates, especially for Exchange, would blow up Exchange and you'd be out of email until you could either reverse the patch or fix the backward compatibility issues. It was a common problem. So CrowdStrike's different. CrowdStrike operates in Amazon Web Services. They have a massive presence. They support customers all over the world. They have huge amounts of customers. In fact, CrowdStrike was the go-to endpoint protection for just about every company because they were the industry leader. And typically when they push updates, like a certain time every week or every month, they push an update. This time they pushed an update engine. They actually deployed it on the 16th and they pushed the transition last night, and it blew up in Europe first and then it blew up in the US. And if you have a Windows 10 box and you're in a business, which a lot of businesses do have Windows 10 boxes, you were blue screen. They released a patch and a procedure this morning to roll it back. However, the patch is manual. So literally the procedure is you have to go in, restart the box. You have to remove the file that's the affected file and then update the older file and replace the new file with the old file and take it backwards in order for your machine to work again. And I just to give you the second and third order effects of this. So this took entire companies to their knees. Like, you, almost all of Europe that was on CrowdStrike was full stop this morning. No, I mean, blue screen, no productivity. And if you're talking about users in an office, users that are remote, you're talking about a significant logistical challenge because you have to go out and touch each one of those endpoints and update that endpoint. So it created a significant challenge for companies all over the world. And, you know, I was on Tommy's podcast this morning. I talked through what it looks like from the first to second order effects. First order effects are the logistics. So this took down airports. It took down hospitals. It took down companies. It took down airlines. Full logistics stop. I mean, full logistics stop. And the second and third order effects of that is the longer it takes for these companies to come back and for them to roll the patch back, then the longer it's going to take for them to get moving again. And most importantly, if those industries, especially logistics, come full stop, then guess what? There's nothing rolling to the stores. There's nothing rolling to FedEx. There's nothing being fulfilled. It's just sitting on a shelf, which means you're going to have food spoilage, inventory loss. You're going to have goods in shipment that can't continue to move because the automated systems are locked up. You're going to have food and things that are coming in from the ports that can't be brought into the warehouses, et cetera. So you can see the massive problem building up as the days stack and go by. So this created a massive problem. And I could tell you, my company is European based and it literally full stop. And I get up at 4:35 and start my workday at 5 because everybody's in Europe. and it's their afternoon, and they were all full stop. So, and of course, my phone blew up. And then I went to lunch with some of my former teammates that were that worked for me, and they walked me through what they were doing to remediate it. But it was 1 o'clock by the time we started. They had been working since 3 o'clock in the morning, and they were only able to remediate about 50 servers in their business and about 45 laptops and endpoints out of 500 servers, 4,000 endpoints. So you can see the logistical challenge that goes along with this, and how this will be the death of CrowdStrike. And how it'll go is CrowdStrike's customers will slowly but surely get off of their platform. And once the last machine is off their platform, then they're going to start the litigation against them for loss of revenue, impact of the business, brand damage, et cetera, as well as the litigation around the fact that they didn't test this. Now, typically when you roll out a change like this, you run it through regression and concurrency testing to make sure there's no issues with it when you roll it out to a number of machines. This should have been caught during testing. You can't tell me they didn't test this. And if they didn't, then they're really done, because the litigation from this alone will bury them, not to mention the liability. So this is the pitfall of an online service. This is why Amazon has gone to great lengths and invested a tremendous sum of money to ensure that there's redundancy and separation between their data centers, and that they build concurrency between their data centers. So if one's taken down by a power outage or a natural disaster, great, but you also have mechanisms for denial of service and other attacks, and you spend a tremendous amount of money to do that. I know, because I built a lot of that and helped build a lot of that at ServiceNow. And I watched some very smart people try to solve some very complex problems. And this is one of those problems you solve. If we roll this out, what's our rollback plan? And that's the other piece. When you roll something like this out and you're rolling it out to millions of endpoints, you better have a rollback plan. If X happens, this is what we do. They had no rollback plan. So that's the stuff I know. My conjecture on this is actually threefold. So there's a lot of shops that have already migrated off of CrowdStrike because it's the industry leader. They're extremely expensive. Because they're extremely expensive, they've moved off of CrowdStrike to other platforms. One of those platforms is Cybereason. Cybereason is an Israeli company owned by a former Israeli general that has deep ties to Mossad. So you can make the leap that, and let me backtrack a little bit. A year ago, there was a story that was released that anybody using CrowdStrike should look for their XYZ indications, because it was, I don't know if it was a 0 day, a rumor, or what the case was, but there was a report that all of the CrowdStrike systems could be bypassed by an adversary, and they could go right to the operating system and CrowdStrike would never know it. That was a year ago. Fast forward a year, CrowdStrike goes down because of a patch. So you can make the leap that there was an inject of bad code that caused this outage. Because remember, you don't need to destroy the product. You just need to disrupt the business. And this is a good use case for disruption operations, because it's so massively disrupted operations in Europe that they're going to see shortages in stores. They're going to see a lot of different things. And it's all going to be the trickle-down effect, second and third order effects of the fact that this outage caused all these systems to go off. So you have the perfect storm that was created by, quote unquote, a patch. And so if you're an adversary and you don't want to destroy their systems, the next thing you do is you disrupt. You create a situation where you can disrupt all these systems. And that does three things. One, kills the brand, does brand damage, and their stock was down 30% by 11 o'clock today. So they're done. I mean, they're done. They may never recover from this. They might, but they may never recover from this. And we're talking about companies that spend $1.5, $1.6, $1.7 million a year on endpoint protection. That's a lot of money when you're talking about a large institution. And so they're not going to look at this lightly. They're going to look at this as we're paying as a bunch of money for you to do the due diligence on your product so it doesn't impact our business. And the fact that you haven't done that due diligence tells me that you're not doing the right thing. And when you look at it from a business perspective, the business perspective is really, we need to generate, generate revenue without any disruptions. And if you have to go remediate 7,000 endpoints and you've reduced your staff and relied on CrowdStrike, guess what? You're going to be struggling for a long time. I mean, if you're a consultant right now, you're going to make a shitload of money. But again, it's going to be a very, very telling week. Now, from a distraction point of view, what a great distraction. You release some kind of an issue into the wild. And let's remember, CrowdStrike is the same company that did the forensics on the Russiagate stuff. They were the ones that did the forensics. What does that tell you? So they're obviously tied to the DNC. Would they sacrifice themselves and all that revenue and fall on their sword to create a distraction? Hard to say, but it's a perfect distraction, because we pivoted off of the disclosure of stuff that was coming out from the Trump assassination attempt to CrowdStrike. So you can see on a bigger picture and a bigger level, you can see how many different ways you can use this to deflect away from what's going on. And look, by the way, they're talking about removing Joe from the race, removing Joe from office and replacing him with somebody else and having an open convention. You see how the game's played? Look over here, nothing going on over here. That's how the game's played. So you can make the case for Cyber Reason. You can make the case for Mossad. And why do I talk about Cyber Reason? If you're in a Mossad and you're an intelligence-based company, what is the best way to get onto an endpoint and collect intelligence for an entire population? You put endpoint protection. Why? Because endpoint protection, especially CrowdStrike, is very invasive to the operating system. You place a huge amount of trust in CrowdStrike when you install an application, because it's looking for rootkits, which is a piece of code that sits in the firmware before it even starts up the operating system. You're looking for operating system vulnerabilities, memory vulnerabilities, hardware vulnerabilities. You're looking for pretty much everything related from hardware to software for every endpoint that it's installed on. So it has a massively intrusive presence to have it there. And of course, if you have it there, you want it running in the background to where it's not killing the performance of the box, it's not hogging all the resources, and it's not, you know, slowing down the hard drive, or even worse, crashing the machine, which is exactly what this did. So you place a huge amount of trust in that anyway. And when you have it on the box, guess what? It's on the box and it's always beaconing home. It's always sending telemetry back to the dashboard, and they've architected CrowdStrike so you have no control over the dashboard. You can silence alerts, you can normalize alerts, but you can't do anything to turn off features, turn on features, adjust features. You can't do any of that. It's just a dashboard that says, this is what we're doing. And it has the power to sequester and quarantine a box if it looks like it's got malware on it. And then it also will try and remediate it, which means it'll try and remove the malware. And if it can't do that, it sits in quarantine, fires an alert, and then your staff has to go physically go get the box. That's a huge amount of trust. And the even worse part is a lot of companies have replaced a lot of their other sensors, like, you know, packet sniffers and things like that you would have resident on the box, local firewalls, et cetera, which I never believed in. Endpoint firewalls anyway, because they just generate a lot of noise and use up a lot of memory. They don't really give you any value other than you've been owned. I blocked it. You're still owned, but it's still blocked. Yeah. So there's a lot of pieces to it that you can make the case for. And the thing that I want to caution everybody against is this kind of stuff does happen all the time. There's usually some measure of outage, some measure of performance issues with any service, because you have hardware that goes down, you have software that gets hung up. It's just the nature of the beast, right? And they run an Amazon, which is a huge virtualization environment. And they have all these different resources running in the background. You don't know what Amazon is running on the servers beneath whatever instance you're running. So you could have an instance, you could share an instance and resources on the hardware. You don't know when you sign up for Amazon. They just throw you into a pool and they charge you for that instance. So we don't know if, you know, when they were testing this, if it was tested in a virtual environment, if it was actually tested in a hardware environment, we don't know. It should have been tested in an environment that mirrors the patch levels for most companies. Meaning, you have companies that patch to current, meaning if their software is like out of date and there's been an update, they'll apply all the updates and bring it to the most current update. There's other companies that operate one rev back of updates. There's companies that are struggling to keep their systems updated. They might be two revs back. You have to check 2 to 3 revs back so you can check for backward compatibility issues, because you never know what somebody's patching level is. So when you deploy that, you test it in a number of environments to make sure it's not going to break the system you're putting on. I mean, we used to have to do that with phones, right? It used to be when there's two regions on the phone. There's a FDI region. I can't remember the other region on a phone, but there was two regions on a cell phone. And before you send anything to a cell phone, you would have to test it to make sure what you're sending to it wasn't going to brick the phone, because you're talking about somebody out in the field. They got to go to a store. You got to replace the phone. You got to download their data. You got to figure out what's wrong with the phone. The phone's got to come back to the manufacturer. And if that, you know, whole round robin turns into a $150 exercise just for all of the transit fees to move that phone from point A to point B. So you try and eliminate that as much as possible, and you test as many scenarios as you could possibly test before you send the update. And they used to do updates on phones where you'd send these discrete text messages in just a whatever sequence, and they'd be numbered, and then the phone would recompile the update and then apply it to the phone. And so we would test multiple patch levels. Like somebody turns off their phone for 3 months, there's been 2 updates. You have to go out and query the phone to find out what update it's on, send it to the dependencies it needs in order to update to that current level, and away you go. So my point is there's a lot of logistics in doing updates, which is why you do a lot of testing to do it. You don't just throw the shit out there and hope for the best, especially in an environment where you're servicing millions of customers that are paying you millions and millions of dollars, expect your service to be fucking bulletproof. So just that lapse in due diligence will cost them their company. I guarantee you, whoever pushed that patch without testing it, fired, done, unemployable, done. So, and you could go down the rabbit hole and look at all the scenarios that potentially come out of this. But if I was a betting man, I'd say that this could legitimately be an error. This legitimately could be distraction, or this could be something even more nefarious. We will know more in time. But right now, it looks like somebody just didn't test a patch, which is even worse. So let me catch up on some of the comments. You guys are like typing a mile a minute. Yeah. You guys are talking about your experience. Yeah, a lot of good engineers in here. Man, if you worked in the telco night, I'm telling you, man, that's old school. That's where the whole subnets came from. The 24-bit subnets is off the old switchboards. Yeah, you're in the weeds, Vedic. Nobody does requirements anymore. That's part of the problem. They don't do any due diligence. That's way, 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 way big problem. Now this isn't DEI either. This is one of those deals where, and I see this all the time. So one of the things I see on the security side of the house is number one thing I deal with. Number one is patching. That's the number one thing I deal with, because most organizations cycle through people, especially in operational roles. They cycle through people like you go through drinking water. So patching is one of the biggest things. The other thing is most companies have very complex and customized environments. So you don't just patch systems because it breaks stuff. And every almost every company now is online in some way. So you have to do a lot of due diligence around doing patching in the first place. But that's the number one thing. That's the number one deal, that the number one access point for any attacker, any malware, any ransomware is unpatched systems. Number two, and most importantly, is privileged access users like admins and admin passwords that are either non-existent or they're set to something super simple and they're easily brute forced. That's the second thing that we see a lot of. The third thing is ports that are left over or configurations that are not complete that are pushed to endpoints like firewalls and routers. That's a big, big issue. But the thing that gets most companies, aside from the technology, is people. People are apathetic. They don't care. You go out to social media, you play the snowball game. Guess what? You bring a virus into the environment. And that's what CrowdStrike's supposed to protect against, is that kind of abuse of the system. And that's why they have, you know, acceptable use policies. Here's what you can use the system for. So by CrowdStrike blowing up all of this, it basically preempted all of those other activities from happening. And so now you've got all these companies that are racing to get their systems back online. And look, there's a lot of Windows out there. There's a lot of companies that use Windows. And you're going to see probably a mass exodus from CrowdStrike. The question is, the tell is going to be, where's everybody going? And what's the pace at which they do that? So that's the CrowdStrike thing. It's too much to, it's too early to tell what the real story is, but the things I've seen and things I've heard is actually pretty normal, bad process. So, but you can make the leap either way. Let's talk about the assassination attempt. So we covered that Saturday, we covered that Sunday, we covered that Wednesday, and there's more and more information coming out. But let me say this again, just so everybody's on the same page. I'm still not convinced that it was real. I'm not convinced that Trump wasn't a part of it, and I'm not going to convince myself either way until a complete set of information comes out. Given the fact that the regime is trying desperately to cover their tracks, this really does look like it was a live attempt on him. He didn't know about it, but a lot of people around him, including his detail, knew about it. And if that's the case, then the rest will come out. And if you look at the optics of it, and you look at the positioning around him, CNN breaking in from another live cast to go and watch one of his rallies, which they never do. They wanted to shoot Trump on stage and slow motion in high def, watch his brain matter blow all over that stage. That's what they wanted. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. And if you look at it from that perspective, then you can see that, okay, Trump wasn't a part of this. But if you look at the other perspective, which is, we didn't see any updates from any doctors at any hospitals. We didn't see the wound on the air. We didn't see or hear from anybody from any of the medical field about his condition. And then 2 hours later, he announces J.D. Vance and he's back on stage and he's back in the public eye. There should have been a briefing by a doctor. There should have been a bunch of press conferences with the first responders, crickets. So that part is suspect to me. And that part is something that needs to be discussed and disclosed by the Trump campaign. And then the RNC convention that followed, he shows up with this big MyPillow on his ear, which, you know, if you have something up here on the top of your ear, why are you covering your whole ear? So, you know, there might be a medical professional in the audience that can tell me what that's all about. But, you know, if the round struck the top of his ear, there should be some burn marks. There should be some, you know, probably would have taken off some of his ear. And we've heard nothing. So, and then the RNC convention was what? Make Israel great again. I don't know if you watched night three, but I watched a little bit of night three. My God, what an absolute fucking train wreck. People in the crowd, yo, Israel, yo, you're the victims. What? Somebody asked me a question. Why does that need to be at the fucking RNC? This is not the state of Israel. This is the United States of America. This is not, go celebrate, you're a dual citizen. Go tell me you fought for the Israelis. Fuck you. This is America. I don't want to hear that shit at the Republican National Convention or the Democratic National Convention. You're your own country. Go live in your own fucking country and stop bringing it here. Nobody wants to hear it. And for all of you lemmings that were sitting there cheering, yay, Israel, guess what? They're committing fucking genocide right now in Gaza, and nobody's doing a thing about it. So don't talk to me about make Israel great again. I'm done listening to that shit. I was so incensed listening to it, I had to turn it off. I'm like, are you shitting me? This is what we signed up for. This is what we signed up for. You got this MyPillow shit on your ear, and you're talking about making Israel great? How about making our own country squared away again? How about cleaning our own house up first? My God, what an abomination. And what it showed graphically to the entire fucking world, which is where my disgust really comes in, is from the fact that you have senators in the government sitting on the floor at the RNC that didn't stand up and say, why are we doing this? And now the entire world sees just how owned the Republican side of the House is, or conservative side, however you want to call them. The conservative side of the Uniparty is completely owned by Israel. And it's on display for everybody to see. It's reprehensible and it's disgusting, because that tells me that none of them have our best interest and have never had our best interests in mind. They're just selling their souls for dollars. And then on the other side of the fence, you got the left, which is the pseudo Uniparty that is sold our soul to communism, and they all want to turn us into communists. It's disgusting to watch now. This is why I say tune out, because when you look at it, you see it, you can't unsee it. And you see just how far down the bowl we swirled. Every single institution is compromised. And it shows you graphically, there's no left and right. There's the haves and the have-nots. That's why I say that. It's exactly why I say it. Because I see this shit and I'm like, these guys are controlled by oligarchs. And then to find out that J.D. Vance. I was talking to Mike Ferris this afternoon. By the way, we're going to try and do a show tomorrow. Try and do a coffee in the mic tomorrow with Mike. In fact, I'm going to do a coffee in the mic with Mike tomorrow. We're going to try and get Bracken to do a show with just the two of us and with the three of us to talk through some of the CrowdStrike stuff, because I'm sure Matt's got a unique perspective on this. We're going to do that tomorrow, whether it's Matt or not. It depends on his schedule. I was talking to Mike earlier today, and we were talking about the CrowdStrike stuff, and we were talking about Nick Fuentes. And I've never watched Nick Fuentes, but I watched about 10 minutes of his live cast on the RNC. And I was shocked at the number of viewers. He had thousands of viewers watching him. And he's saying some of the exact same things that I was saying, which was shocking at first, because you hear all this stuff. He's anti-Semite. He's a racist. Actually, what I heard was a kid that's saying, why aren't we talking about our own country? Why is this important to us? There's a 98-year-old World War II veteran they brought on stage. Yeah, thanks, Mike. He's 25-year-old kid that's on stage. And he's saying the exact same things that I've been saying, except he's saying they brought this 98-year-old World War II vet on, Normandy guy. And he's like, that's who we are. That's who we are. That's what should be at the Republican National Convention, not this Israel stuff. And, you know, this was after I was watching the Israel stuff. And I was so disgusted. But he's dead on. And anytime you say anything against Israel, anti-Semite. And then the Trump speech, he looks tired. Looks like he made a deal. He smoked. I mean, look, the RNC convention, one day, show up in the morning, You do your rah-rah, go team, bullshit. You do your whole, you know, omni, omni, UHF, go forth and communicate. And then you nominate the guy, you're out. I don't need to hear from Don Jr.'s daughter. I don't need to see you trying to make her into an influencer on Instagram and TikTok and whatever the fuck else she's on. I don't care. I want to see why people are voting to nominate this person for the presidency. What are the issues we care about? But instead, it was this parade of stupid for four days. The fuck are you going to talk about for 4 days? Like, Jesus Christ. Home, Joan, Gabby, fucking, you're done. There, you're nominated. Go forth and win. It's my point is it's turned into this dog and pony show that's so disgusting that you can't even watch it. Like, they brought out Hulk Hogan ripping his shirt. Dude, you're 90. Just stop. It was just this disgusting display. It was this big so what show. It was a bunch of noise, and it's our political process is so broken. It's not even funny. And you know, the other part of it too is, you talk to the left, and Trump's a dick. I mean, he's family oriented. He cares about his grandchildren. He knows his grandchildren. He puts his family first. He believes, he has faith. He believes in God. He wants to do the right thing. He generally likes people. He's good to his employees. He's a generous person. What a dick. How dare you? That's where we're at as a country, is that those two, you know, massively polar opposite positions. So why would you belabor this when the best thing he could have done is go in on Monday and Tuesday, be nominated Tuesday afternoon, done. Instead, this thing stretched out to Thursday. No wonder he's fucking tired. I'd be tired. I was tired of watching it. Tired of hearing about it. So anyway, you see my point. It's turned into this grotesque display and distraction. And, you know, Kevin McCarthy was there, and there was the show with Matt. Can't think of Matt's name. Florida guy, anyway. He walked up and said, "If you even go on the stage, you're going to get booed off." Yeah, okay. You got your 15 minutes at the mic. Then go sit the fuck down. It's that kind of stuff that gets under my skin. And when you look at the whole process of how they do it, you know, conventions used to be 2 days, 2.5 days max. Getz, thank you, Mike. Jesus Christ. Super glad you're here, by the way. Yeah, just, my God. Just this, dog and pony show. Stupid. And then today on Tommy's show, I was talking about Stripe. So let me give you the 5 minutes on Stripe, because it's been the word I would say for it is ordeal. So I have a Substack that my admins created almost 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. They put a lot of time and energy to put it together. And it was actually American Patriot that put it together. He goes by Pirate Fletcher. Off of Telegram, but he's American Patreon Patrick. So thank you, Rick, for that, setting that up. Appreciate it. Anyway, put it all together, and we started throwing content, because I'm like, we need a place to throw this content so people don't have to sift through Telegram, because it's not intuitive, that the feed just gets cluttered with garbage and nonsense. How do we do that? So he went out, took the initiative, and created a Substack. Well, he handed it over to me, because his wife just recently passed away, and my condolences, brother. I'm sorry for your loss. It was a long fight. So my condolences. And anyway, he put this together, handed it over to me, and I started adding content to it as much as I possibly can, as fast as I can, which is it's tough. Like weeks like this where my head's just on the grindstone all week. Anyway, I was getting a bunch of requests for people that wanted to donate to Trooper Care Network. And so I turned on donations, was going to run it through the business and just, you know, do the write-off for it. But, or at least do the write-down for it, whatever it is. Anyway, Stripe starts saying, "We need more information on your business. We need more information on your business. We need your URL. We need the URL you're going to be using. We need to know what your business does. We need your EIN number." So When you sign up a payment processor, if you haven't done this before, you sign up a payment processor. They basically want your tax ID, your doing business name as, it has to match your tax ID, or your business name, and then your doing business as, and then the bank and bank information, and then how many transactions you think and how much money you think you're going to run across the platform, right? And that's how they figure out their rate for what they're going to charge you. This didn't stop. This was literally, we need more information on your business. We need to know what you sell. We need to know what you plan on selling on the site. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, you don't need any of that shit. In fact, why the fuck are you asking me this? And then, so I submit all this information. I answer a bunch of stupid questions. And then I get, you're good to go. Not even 2 hours later, not even 2 hours, I get another message for him saying, you're out of compliance with our terms of service. We need more information. So I wrote back, okay, fuck stick. I've talked to six different people. All six people asked for different information. Then I got a confirmation that this is good. Tell me what it is that you're looking for. And oh, by the way, you're a payment processor. Your job is to process payments. I don't have to ask you, since I'm paying you for a service, I don't have to fucking ask you why it is that if I can sell my product or where I can sell my product or what my product's authorized on your platform, fuck you. And so then I got a response from him and then I'm good to go. And then all of a sudden we're going to close your account. So I flamed him today on True Social and on Twitter, which I should have done right away. Information warfare guy. Why didn't I do that up front? So I flamed him on Twitter. And what was their answer on Twitter? I can't make it up, so I'm going to read it because this is the dumbest, stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. But this is what would you expect any less from a Silicon Valley bunch of dipshits that are wrapped up in, we have to make a substantial impact on the environment. We need to make sure to everything we do, it's sustainable to save the kumquat. Retarded. Hey there, we're sorry to hear about your frustrating experience and we'd be glad to look into this further. Please feel free to send us a DM so we can gather a few more details. And my answer was, go fuck yourself. First of all, I'm done talking to Kathy and Vic and Joan and whoever else feels like they need to communicate with me and tell me they need more information. And then, oh, by the way, isn't it funny that when I ask you for a phone call, you go radio silent? This to me, Stripe to me, and this Stripe covers locals, they cover Substack, and I can't remember the other one. They cover like three different platforms. It's your only option. So I turned off Stripe today and sent them a very, you know, one of many very terse messages telling them, fuck you, turn off my account, go fuck yourselves. But the point I'm making and the reason why I'm bringing this up is this is the game plan. This is how they plan to deplatform gun companies, to deplatform tactical equipment companies, to deplatform conservative companies, conservative NGOs. They want to bury you in terms of service, ask you for all this information, and then tell you you don't meet their terms of service and they don't have to support you and keep your money while they're doing it. I mean, I think I only have like 60, 70 bucks out there, but that's money that you donated to Substack so we could actually do more content and support Trooper Care Network. So if you want to support Troop, please give to Trooper Care Network. He needs your help. And all these other guys that are on the show, Matt Everett, Clay Martin, Chris Weatherton, Joe Dolio, and Matt Bracken, those guys are their books, their storefronts, that's their income. That's how they make money. So if you want to support them, that's a way to do it. And those guys I support, right? Because they're putting themselves out there to do this. Anyway, so that's the next battlefront is going to be on the payment processor side. This whole terms of service thing and all the legislation they passed to where they want to make sure that there's no domestic terrorists. This is where it's showing up. This is why I said they're going to try and deplatform people. They're totally going to deplatform people as much as they possibly can. And it's only going to wrap up over the next 3 months. I think this, and so let me play devil's advocate for a bit before I close this out. If I'm looking at the indications in the situation. And Troop called out, and Troop's a threat analyst, so he called out a couple of different things. So one of the biggest things he called out was that there was going to be an event in mid-June or mid-July, mid-August, probably mid-July, and that was the Trump assassination. And he was talking about something bigger. This CrowdStrike thing could be a test bed for a bigger attack. It could be a proof of concept. And it could be a proof of concept for take it offline, critical infrastructure, power, and water. Because guess what? A lot of those systems are controlled by Windows. And a lot of those systems, especially SCADA systems, about 10 years ago, it's been more now, 12 years ago now, my battalion did an entire cycle, and I mean not just training cycle, we did an entire year looking at SCADA systems and evaluating the threat of SCADA systems around major major metropolitan areas and what it would take for an adversary to disrupt that or destroy that. And you'll find out that those systems, they literally are Windows 98 and they're very susceptible. So we found very, very quickly that there's a lot of systems that are very susceptible because they have proprietary software that can't be upgraded. And that's part of the problem. So I anticipate some kind of an attack that will be conducted against critical infrastructure probably by the middle of August, if this is really a test bed. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, and let me answer your question in just a second, Vedic. The attack vector they need is not sophisticated. They can do denial of service. They can do just like what they did today. They can push a patch. They can interdict a patch on a patching server, or they can hack one of the patches on that Microsoft posts to their site or puts in their upgrades or their update services, and they would never know the difference. And it's very easy to do. It's not as hard as you think. So that's what I see happening. The other piece too is that some of these systems sit in very insecure places. You only need to take one or two down. In fact, Joe Dolio was talking about on Wednesday, he was talking about they were popping transformers in three counties around him in Michigan, and they were trying to get critical infrastructure, but they were just causing local outages instead of major outages. But the attacks have already started, and it's only going to ramp up from there. These were unsophisticated attacks, but a sophisticated attack would do a lot of damage. And I'll give you a case in point. Back in 2013, I was actually in the UK. I was over there. We were doing a data center. We did some upgrades to a data center, adding some security feature, biometrics, bunch of stuff, normal stuff for security, right? But I went over there with a whole team. There was like 12 of us over there, data center guys, hardware guys. We had architects with us. We had, you know, three or four security guys with us. It was a big team. We all had stuff to do. We were trying to finish a data center in the UK, and British Telecom was taken down. I mean, offline. The whole fucking island offline. And when we got online, none of our shit worked. So we got on a call because all the local comms worked, but we had to go to a conference center with a landline in order to do the call off island because all of the IP space was just flooded with noise and you couldn't get any traffic out. That attack lasted for 14 hours and took the whole island offline. Banks, 911 services, all their logistics, all their airlines completely offline. Like they could sit there locally and do stuff, but they couldn't send anything offline. And if you know how airplanes work, and I wish Colonel Johnson was here to talk through this, but they download the flight plan to the aircraft locally and they send that flight plan to the FAA. And I don't know if they do it in advance. I think they send it in advance, but if you can't send any of that, guess what? Airplane doesn't take off. I mean, it's a big deal. So that was 14 hours. We were on the phone in a data center, 14 hours trying to figure out what was going on. And it was finally at the 10 or 11 hour point when somebody figured out that the entire island was down, because they reached out to one of the carriers and said, what's going on? They said the whole British telco is down. So there's a huge, huge opportunity for our adversaries to take down critical infrastructure with a very easy attack. And I anticipate that that is coming, probably sooner rather than later. And if I'm playing devil's advocate, this CrowdStrike thing, it could be a test, a proof of concept. I don't know. It's hard to say, you know, because I've seen both sides of the fence. So I'm not going to say one way or the other, but if I'm looking at it from the perspective of what could happen, yeah, you can make a lot of inferences there. So whatever way this goes, you should have food, water. Troop harps on water all the time. Food, water. You should have alternative comms like radios. If you don't have radios, I know that's archaic, but guess what? You'll be thanking your lucky stars if you have something shortwave and you can talk to people around you. And you'll be able to get some more line of sight with radios, because you'll be extending your reach and your eyesight. So keep that in mind. Vedic, you asked me a question. What was it? What OS should we queue up to replace MS Windows? Well, I have both Linux. I have all three. I have Mac, Linux, and Windows. I even have some old Solaris. If I was any of you, I would go with a Linux platform. It's harder to hack. It's harder to disrupt. It's more reliable. But you're going to trade the UI and the ease of use for a different UI. It writes to the disk different than Windows does. It doesn't give you the same level of disk hack. Can you tell I've been on the phone all day and talking all day? Doesn't give you the level of access to the disk. Wow, this is one for the books. So it's going to be a massive difference. And if you've never used Linux, it's a steep learning curve. If you're a Linux guy, you already hate Windows. So I don't need to tell you that you hate Windows, because you'll probably tell me. I have a Mac. I use a Mac for most of the things I do, just because Macs don't blow up. You can use a Mac 5 or 6 years, whereas a Windows box, 2 years, you're rebooting it, reloading it, and you're going to either reinstall the operating system or you're going to do a bunch of cleanup to get it to run right. And I moved off of Windows probably 10 years ago. I used Linux for probably 5 years, and side by side with Mac, just because I like the reliability. I don't necessarily like the user interface, because I think the user interface on Macs are retarded. And I think Microsoft makes their products, purposely make their products retarded, so you're driven back to a Microsoft platform. But the Mac has some advantages that you won't get with the Linux platform, and that is they built all the connectivity, they built all the application layer stuff. So if you got something that wants to go out and connect, it'll figure out how to do it internally. So all of the logic is there in the operating system to connect to networks, Bluetooth, and everything else. In Linux, depending on which instantiation of Linux you may have to go download drivers, you may have to go do an update to it, you may have to do a different version in order to get certain things to work. So it depends on what your level of skill is and how much time you want to dedicate to it. But if you're talking about secure Linux, by far. I mean, it helps. I know the guy that wrote that software and wrote that operating system and does a lot of that work for the military and for the agencies. He's a good dude, and I know that he created a solid product there. So, but getting your hands on it, installing it, I will tell you, if you haven't started drinking when you start loading Linux, you better start drinking, because by the time you're done with it, you're going to be drinking, especially if you've never done it before, because a lot of things don't make sense. But Linux offers you some advantages that Macs don't. And there's a certain amount of reliability in a Mac, or sorry, in a Linux box that is bulletproof. So if you're running like a file server or you run a backup server in your house, fucking Linux. Throw an extra disk on it, allocate the disk space, and use Linux. Even if you're doing an entertainment server, bulletproof, never hiccups. And you can patch it, keep it patched, and it doesn't hiccup. But if you're doing anything with media, if you're doing anything with online, Mac. So, but that's just my bias, right? And I have Windows boxes I use. Like I have a box over there I use to hack the four, the Bronco. So, and program radios, all that's in Windows. So it just depends on what your level of skill is. And I will tell you that if you make the transition, you're a Windows guy and you make the transition to Linux, it's going to be a very steep and frustrating learning curve. Because there's a tool, everything done at Linux is done at the, it's done at the file level and it's done on the command line. There is some interface differences, and there is some user interface on Linux that they didn't have before, but for the most part, a lot of guys still do command line. So you're gonna do a deep investment in time, you're gonna do a deep investment in learning, and you're gonna do a deep investment in how to do things in that operating system that you can do with a click and a drag in Microsoft or a mouse or in a Mac. So keep that in mind. But trade one thing for security. So it just depends on how much you want to invest in it. I would say that if you have an old shitty Linksys router, you should go update it. If you have an old shitty Netgear router, you should retire it and get something newer. But it's no guarantee, even if you get something new. So, and all the new stuff is set up to, most of it anyway, set up to interface with your internet carrier. So, and some of that can be time consuming too. So for the novices out there, go to a Mac. It's easier. That's my advice. Hour goes by quick, especially when you're ranting about payment processors. I'll be back on Monday, or actually I'll be on tomorrow with Mike Ferris, Coffee and a Mic. I'll be back Monday with a sit rep. Wednesday we'll do another round table. And then I'm in the process right now of setting up a live audio stream for Thursday nights instead of Friday nights, because Friday night's kind of a wash. But we're going to do a live audio. Hopefully we'll do it this Thursday. We'll see if we can get it coordinated and I can get it set up. But look for that on Podbean. RSS offers a live feed, but you have to stream somewhere. I think Podbean just streams everywhere. But I'll get it posted in both. I'll get it posted on Twitter, Truth Social, and Telegram once I figure out which platform and where we're going to stream to. I'll get that done by Wednesday. So if we do a show Thursday, you'll know exactly where to go. Raspberry Pis. Let me address this real quick because Knight Templar just put this in. Raspberry Pis. I have 2, 3, 4 of them. They're good for one use case. And most people won't know what that one use case is. So all you tech geeks that are like into getting your furnace and all that other bullshit set up on a Raspberry Pi or setting up your surveillance system with your Raspberry Pi, take that out of the channel. You're just going to confuse people. So I you know, first of all, A for effort for putting that all together and doing all the programming. However, most people that are tuned into this don't know what that is and will never know what to do with that. So yeah, but they're good for one use case and you can do a lot of good things with them. But you have to know how to program them and you have to be patient, really patient. So my 2 cents on that. Dale, are there any other questions? You see any other questions out there? Yeah, good point. So Dale was telling me that the user interface on Linux is not always reliable. True point. And Raspberry Pis are not for noobs. Nope. So if you're new to this and you want to use a Raspberry Pi and go set up your camera system or your set up your AC system on it, yeah, get ready for some pain and suffering. In fact, I always thought that the best form of torture was to put somebody in front of a Linux box and play It's a Small World repeatedly in 75 languages until they capitulated, and feed them those cinnamon Altoids at the same time. That was the best form of torture for me, at least, anyway. I don't want to do too much more deep dive into operating systems, but you got the point. Like I said, I'll be back on tomorrow, Coffee to Mike. I'll be back on Monday with a sit rep. We'll see what happens over the weekend. The rumor is that Joe Biden's going to step down, step out of the race. He's going to stay in office. They're going to do an open convention. We'll see if that transpires this weekend. Supposedly, it's supposed to happen this weekend. So keep your eyes open for that. And keep your eyes on information that's coming out about the shooter and about the assassination attempt. This CrowdStrike thing is going to go on for several months. The thing you're looking for there is if there was any kind of nefarious inject into their war file or into their update cycle. And we probably won't hear about that right away, but it'll come out through another source, probably somebody close to CrowdStrike and that team. So just keep that in mind. And somebody asked me about music. The thing about music is that I got popped a couple of times because I didn't announce what music I was playing, didn't clear it, blah, blah, blah. So no music for a while. But, I almost forgot. I got. So big shout out to Tommy Kerrigan today, because when I did a show today, we talked about Jerome Corsi. I'd forgot about it. And then I was sitting at lunch and Jerome Corsi called me. If you don't know who Dr. Jerome Corsi is, he's been around. He was in the Q circle doing Q decodes. He's written like 12 or 15 books. He wrote a book about where Hitler escaped to after World War II. He's written books about the Clintons. He's written a book about the deep state. He was persecuted by the deep state because of Sandy Hook. I can't remember what it was. Sandy Hook, the elections. I can't remember which one it was. But anyway, he called me out of the blue today and wants to come on and do a roundtable. So look for that. Not sure how soon I can get him on the schedule, but I'm super excited about it. So if you don't know who he is, go look up Dr. Jerome Corsi. Look up his books. Those books are all over Amazon. And we'll be back on Monday. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.